Welcome to Kansas City Cannabis, where local roots and city pride thrive. Whether you're new or seasoned to cannabis, our expert bud tenders offer guidance and a welcoming atmosphere at our four KC locations. Experience genuine service and hometown heart. Visit kccannabis.org for more.
He covers the Chiefs.
With that, time's yours.
And you're in that place where you're in the playoffs.
He covers the Royals.
Flair, over there in the middle, on the left.
Salvador, just take us through your emotions.
He covers college sports.
But one great thing about the conference tournament, where I think it gives teams hope.
And every now and then, he likes a good laugh.
Make them laugh, make them laugh. Don't you know everyone wants to laugh?
He's Blair Kirchhoff of the Kansas City Star. On the program.
Of course he is. Blair Kirchhoff, brought to you by Robert Brogdon Buick GMC, I-35 and Santa Fe. That is where you will find incredible deals on incredible vehicles with the best service you're going to find anywhere. They understand your time is valuable. They're going to make the car buying experience as fast, easy, and painless as possible. See them today. 1500 East Santa Fe Street. You can get big, big deals at Brogdon right now, like saving up to $10,700, almost $10,700 the new 2020 GMC Acadia. Almost $10,000, over $9,900 on the 21 GMC Sierra 1500. Best truck on the road, by the way, and the Buick Enclave. 2020 Enclaves save up to $14,555. The time to buy a new vehicle is right now. The place to do it, Robert Brogdon Buick GMC. See him online at robertbrogdon.com. Mr. Kirchhoff, sir, how are you?
Oh, you know, just getting ready for another AFC Championship game. Ho-hum. You know, yeah, just another one in Kansas City.
It's what we do here, you know, right. Championships.
We're the capital of the AFC Championship game.
Yeah, it kind of started with Sporting in 13, Royals in 15, yep. Chiefs in 19, and now we're just, you know, ready for the Royals to just about reload. Sporting's trying to reload. They added another great season, finishing at the top of the Western Conference. It's what we do. Championship caliber professional sports is what we do.
It wasn't that way for quite a long time.
Yeah, that's true.
Quite a long time. But it's really cool. You know, it's cool. Sunday will be great. We're all assuming Mahomes is playing, and I'm kind of stoked for it. I think it's going to be fun. Fun day.
Who do you like in the game, Blair?
Well, I like the Chiefs, but I'm trying to find reasons for the Chiefs to win and the Bills to lose, and you know, you just basically list on two different columns and. One thing that bothers me about the Chiefs is just how, you know, in the two of the last three games that the starters have played, you know, the Chargers game being the exception, it hadn't been great. Now Kenny played almost two quarters of the previous game but they were settling for field goals, even with Mahomes in there, for a couple of those drives. And then of course the Falcons game, which the offensive line had a bad game. So, just look at, you know, Chiefs scoring. They've gone 17, 21, 22 in their last three games, starters or non-starters, and that hasn't happened in the Mahomes era. They haven't had a stretch quite like that. So I guess we're all kind of banking on it being a high-scoring game, but I thought that was going to be the case last week against the Browns. But on the other side, Saran, I got to tell you, I like the way the defense is playing, and it reminds me of how they ended last season. They got better when it mattered the most, and this is why, you know, this is why Tyrann Mathieu and Frank Clark are with the Chiefs, and why they re-signed Chris Jones. And I have trust and faith in this defense, and I think they'll get the job done.
I'm going to give you a simple task, right? Very easy. Take out your crystal ball.
Got it.
Tell me what the score of the game against the Browns would have been had Patrick Mahomes not gone down.
I think it would have been more, but remember when he went down, the Browns had just made it 19-10. So they had, you know, Tyrann Mathieu had gotten the pick and the return, and they went three and out and missed the field goal. So then the Browns go down and score, and it's on the next series that Mahomes, you know, gets hurt. Now, has the game already shifted? I thought until the Mahomes injury happened, I thought that sequence was really important. not being able to missing the field goal and not being able to get a touchdown on the takeaway. So maybe the momentum had already shifted. Who's to say? Look, having covered Mahomes now for 3 years, you put kind of faith in him that he's going to go down and get you points, and they're going to win the game probably by a more comfortable margin than they did win. But you know, the previous seven games suggest that they won, suggests nothing was going to be easy for the Chiefs against the Browns. And I don't think it's going to be easy on Sunday. I think it's less than a score victory for the Chiefs.
Really?
Yeah, okay. I do. It's a different Bills team than week six. They were missing four starters that day. Matt Milano, the linebacker, makes a difference. I Bills are hot, but they are playing on the road. And I heard Curtis say this in the last hour, and I think, you know, there's truth to this. There are reasons why the Bills got outgained in their two playoff games, right? And Rivers did throw for over 300 yards against them, a couple of touchdowns. Didn't, you know, the Bills defense stood up when it had to on that final possession, but still, Rivers had a good game. I expect Mahomes to have a good game on Sunday.
Yeah, I do too, and I get the feeling, you know, I know the Matt Milano thing he's getting brought up, but I think that's a little bit overrated. I think that's more coincidence than anything. The Chiefs are undefeated when L'Jarius Sneed plays.
Well, they were undefeated last year when Eric Fisher played, right?
Yeah.
They were 11-0 with Fisher on the field and lost their four games when he was out. So you can cherry pick all kinds of stats like that.
Yeah, when teams are win 12 or 13 games in the regular season, then you know you can kind of find your pocket there. I hear you. I think what I've said, to a lot of different places I've been on is that, because the big theme that I get, and this is one of the reasons why I think when everybody's kind of hanging their hat on this, I think it's, you know, it's about to change, right? It seems too easy. Everyone's talking about all the close scores by the Chiefs. Every station today, four different stations asked me about the Chiefs, you know, barely winning.
Yeah.
And so the mindset is, boy, the Chiefs, they can't separate. Usually when you hear that, that's when the team goes and drops a bomb on somebody. And I've been waiting for that to happen, and it hasn't happened. And maybe it's not going to. What I said is, look, what does it mean? I'll tell you when I see how it ends. Right? If it ends with the Bills beating them, then I'll tell you that this team has been tired and worn out and showed a lot of guts in just winning the number of games that they did. If they beat the Bills, and they beat the Bills handily, I'll tell you it means nothing. It means that some, oh, by the way, touchdowns made scores look closer than they are. And a stretch of 10 games where they went 10-0, most teams would have gone 7-3 and nobody would have a theme to it. They'd just say, oh, that this was a good 11-5 team. Right? Instead, the Chiefs were 14-2. And everybody's got this thing because they got to find a reason why the, you know, just saying, boy, they're the best team in the AFC is boring. So to find, you got to find a reason why, oh, the Bills are actually better, even though they lost to them. That's the other thing. There isn't anything, you can't even be like, well, they didn't play, so the Bills are actually, but no, they played, and the Chiefs won, and it was at Buffalo. Like, it's really kind of boring.
And it was convincing.
Yeah, it's really just kind of boring to be like, yeah, the Chiefs are the better team. They should win again.
And yet they are the better team. And listen, if you had four categories, Chiefs win big, Chiefs win close, Bills win close, Bills win big, what would you be your highest percentage? What would you put the biggest slice of the pie in?
Chiefs win big, it's close, or Bills win big?
Yeah, Chiefs win big or Chiefs win close, Bills win big, Bills win close.
Okay. I think the win close, so let's call it three or less, call those toss-up games, right? Like either team could have won. And I think if it's a toss-up game, I'll take the Chiefs. They know how to win those games. Good teams find a way to win close games, and this team does that. So I think the scenario for the Bills to win is more like the Raiders game. And that is they get up, they get some turnovers, and they keep firing. They've got the firepower, and they keep firing to stay out in front of the Chiefs. The Chiefs finally get it together, start making a rally, and get to somewhere between, you know, 24, 27, 34 points. The Bills just keep stretching out, stay in front at 37, 40, something like that. What was the final against the Raiders?
It was like 40-32 maybe, something like that.
Yeah, 40-32. So that to me is how you got to beat the Chiefs. If you're just in a back-and-forth game, the Chiefs are going to get the ball either with 5 minutes left or 3 minutes left or a minute left, and they're going to score. And if they get it with 3 minutes left, they're going to score and leave you nothing. They're so good that they will score and they will burn the clock. And so I don't think you can win a close game against the Chiefs in Arrowhead. You know, I mean, can you? Yes. But I think it'll be really hard for one of those games. So I would say all the close games go the Chiefs' way. And, you know, the blowouts, I would say Bills win big on the Chiefs 20% of the time.
Okay.
Because there are turnovers. They've got enough firepower that if they keep their foot on the gas, they could win by, you know, two scores. I'll give that 15% of the time.
All right.
Bills win close, I'll give 5% of the time. Chiefs win close, I'll give 30% of the time. The Chiefs win by multiple scores 50% of the time. How's that?
Well, that's confident. That's confident. I don't think the Bills are going to win by grounding and pounding. I think they're going to win. If they win, they are going to go over the top the way Derek Carr did and caught the Chiefs completely by surprise, especially if the Chiefs have some cornerback issues. If Bashard Breeland is ruled out and you got to move things around a little bit in the secondary, I think Stephon Diggs on Tre'Davious Ward, I think Ward's going to need help. There are scenarios where, you know, Buffalo will score. We'll get in the end zone and maybe early and often. You know, maybe they score two touchdowns in their first two possessions and the Chiefs are playing from behind. But look, in the end, the Chiefs were built to win this year. They just were. And they all the offseason moves were created for the window for the Super Bowl continues to be open. And now it's a more confident Chiefs team playing Sunday than in either two of the previous AFC Championship games. So, I think the Chiefs win, but the recent tendency of the games being close just bothers me too much.
Yeah, I think if they win big, and I think they were going to win big against Cleveland, and they could have. And maybe not, you know, maybe all the national people that have now turned on us
right.
and are now villainizing us, these scumbags.
That's right. Hate the Chiefs.
Yeah. That
anybody
now hate
but the Chiefs.
That's right. That have all turned on us. I would say that, this team was just one that knew how to win and flip the switch and got enough points to get it done in the regular season because, you know, the narrative that I like, that I want to be true, and I think may very well be true, is that, you know, they get enough points to get the win, and then they're done. Like, they're not worried about show points. The way I've looked at it is, when you haven't won a championship and you get a team down, you want to keep scoring to show how much better you are than that team to make yourself believe that you're good enough to win a championship. And then they look this year like the Patriots, right? We'd see the Patriots have some of these games where it's kind of close, but there they are at the end at 14-2 and 13-3 and 12-4 and 15-1 or 16-0. And there were some close games. And it's just that they didn't need style points because they knew the only thing that was going to measure their season was did they get to the Super Bowl or not, and then did they win it? And I think this team is kind of learned from the Patriots and is in that same mindset.
I agree with that. I've thought about that as well, that I recognize what the Chiefs are doing because we just saw it just a couple of years ago. And I kind of think the Bills might be, maybe we were saying the same thing about the Ravens last year, but the Bills might be where the Chiefs were in 2018. You know, great, great season, glorious season. The had the definitive player, the MVP, the guy that could get them over the hump, and they finally won a playoff game. And then remember the first half of that AFC title game against the Patriots, they just got schooled. It was 14-0, and it could have been more. But I remember Reggie Ragland had an interception in the end zone to prevent another touchdown. But the Patriots just beat the Chiefs up and down the field in the first half, and then the Chiefs responded and could have won the game. But I kind of think that's where the Bills are sort of the Chiefs. Today's Bills are where the Chiefs were two or three years ago.
Yeah. I think that's fair. I believe Patrick Mahomes is so good and so ahead of the curve right now, and he's got weapons that they employ the fourth down, it's almost impossible
yes.
to stop them.
Yes, exactly. That's 25% more offense from already the league's best offense, right?
Really, really 33% because they're only using three of the downs.
Yes, yeah, right.
So, you know, you're getting, okay, an extra one of those. So, I mean, I know it's, you're like, oh yeah, it's kind of simple, but it really is that simple. You know, there's I think that defense, and I can't remember who I was talking to, but defense is no longer about shutouts, right? Like, that's gone. The idea that we're going to win a game 10-6 or something, like, those games are dead. And so when the defenses are already geared to, like, maybe catch you with a trick and create a turnover, but more realistically, just wait till the field shortens behind them and then try to come up with something to stop you, like, almost like, here's the three. If you screw up along the way and drop the ball, we'll pick it up and go. Or you a tip ball or something, we'll be happy to pick it off and take it the other way. But kind of, here's the three, we're not giving you the seven. That's kind of the way defense plays now. And if that's the case, and I think it's smart, because when you do get aggressive, they crush you with big plays over the top.
Yep.
And so if that's how they're going to play, take advantage of it. Because you're, you know, and if that's how your defense is going to play, when you're on offense, if you know you're just going to, you know, retreat until you've got the fort behind you, then play aggressive, right? Because they're probably going to get to your 30 anyway, and then it's a matter of, can you bow up then and make it a long field goal, or do you bow up a little bit later and make it a chip shot field goal? But either way, they're getting to your turf.
Yes, that is so true. And in a game anymore that only has 8, 9, 10 possessions, you know, if you find a way to keep them out of the end zone on six or seven, I should say, or keep them from scoring, whether it's a field goal or a touchdown, that's almost a miracle today. And that's what the Chiefs have done in the regular season, you know, the last game that the starters played, which was against the Falcons, and then against the Browns. You know, the Browns had the back-to-back touchdown drives, including that 18-play, you know, 75-yard drive. But that was it, except for the first half field goal. And that is a winning game today in the NFL. That you are going to, against with the Chiefs, you are absolutely going to win every time if your defense plays like that.
Yeah, I mean, you know, and I do think that there might be a little bit of an issue with the number of possessions in the games. They've done everything they can to try to speed them up, right? By you know, back when we were kids, it was like college. Like, you went out of bounds, the clock stops.
Yes,
it doesn't start
until
we snap the ball. Now they wind it till the last two of the first half, the last five of the game. I don't like that. And what frustrates me is they make all these other decisions that elongate the game, and then what they do is take football away from us to catch back up. Like, we now, instead, we spend a lot of time waiting on them to go to instant replay and jerk around with that, right? We've got time, and they call, like, how many flags were they going to call in that game last week?
Yeah, right.
And they were all, a lot of them were like, that could go either way. Right? Like, if it can go either way, then don't call it. Right? Make the fouls egregious. You know, to me, we spend a lot of time with refs sitting around talking, and then refs coming over talking to the coach. Are you going to challenge? Okay, we're going to challenge. Then they take way more time than they ever say that they're going to take on a challenge. Get rid of all that crap and start stopping the clock so we can have more possessions and more lead changes.
Well, I also think that's why you see teams trying to score, you know, in the last 30 seconds of a half, where, you know, formerly, teams with 30 seconds to go in a half, even if you had all your timeouts, you were taking a knee or you were running the ball, you were done. You weren't gonna make a mistake there. But now teams are desperately trying to get into field goal range, you know, from the 25 with 30 seconds to go, just because they know the possessions are limited in these games. I'm telling you, there are no more than 10 possessions in a football game anymore. You can count them as you go along. And I always look at the drive chart during, and you know, we all watch the game we all have our favorite stat program that we're following the game with. And you know, and the one I watch, I'm always looking at the possession chart to see how long possessions were. And you know, you get two a quarter. If you're lucky, you get five and a half. And you better make the most of them. And the Chiefs have been great with Patrick Mahomes and making the most of those possessions. Basketball has that stat, points per possession. I bet the Chiefs have had the best points per possession in the NFL in the last 3 years.
Yeah, I think they've been very good. There's no doubt. All right, we'll take a break here with Blair Kirkhoff. We'll switch gears. I want to talk a little bit about the mess at Tennessee, what that's going to mean for the SEC East. The Missouri Tigers have a new defensive coordinator, former NFL head coach Steve Wilks. We'll talk about that with Blair Kirkhoff next here on the program.
The Program with Soren Petro.
If you disappear forever, it wouldn't make any difference.
Weekdays from 2 to 6 on Sports Radio 810 WHB.
All right, the Joe's Kansas City Barbecue burnt end of the hour answer. January 1st, 1967, two events that shaped Chiefs history occurred that date. I asked for either one.
Well, one of them.
Two events on
obvious.
What day?
January 1st, 1967. Two events.
January 1st, 1967. Was that the year they moved here?
Nope.
Oh, no. They won the AFL championship that day.
Beat the Bills.
In Buffalo.
In Buffalo in the AFL championship. That was one event. What was the other event that happened that day? Lebo actually got this.
Somebody had
amazing.
To be, somebody had to be born that day.
You're getting warm.
Of note.
You're getting warm.
1967.
Derek Thomas was born that day.
Yep.
Oh, how about that?
Oh, wow. Ha ha.
A little further down the East Coast in Miami, Florida, Derek Thomas was born.
How about that?
Okay.
Born the same day the Chiefs went to their first Super Bowl.
Wow. AFL champ, and I like to write these down so I try to remember them. DT born. What was the date?
1-1-67.
1-1-67. Got it. All right. I like that. Joe's Kansas City Barbecue. Like that even better. I got a little wager. I got a couple different wagers with Joe's Kansas City. One was some folks out at Naked Pizza in Las Vegas. They're Buffalo transplants, and they challenged 50 wings versus some slabs of ribs. Joe's Kansas City said, bring it on, right? So we got that going for us. And Joe's also took the challenge from our buddy Sal. We'll talk about this with Sal. I was on his podcast today, but he'll come on. He handles the Bills sidelines. And got a group that makes a sauce that you put on the wings. So we're going to go Joe's Kansas City Barbecue Sauce versus the wing sauce in Buffalo. So how about that? Take that. Joe's Kansas City not only giving you the best barbecue, but standing up for your rights, standing up for your name. They are as American as it gets, I believe, right now.
That's what
I'll say about that.
Did you see where the Buffalo supermarket is taking Casey Masterpiece off the shelf until Sunday or until Monday?
Good.
Casey Masterpiece, which is, I think, made in Oakland these days. So it started here a long, long time ago, but I think Kraft makes it now.
My buddy's grandfather actually started Casey Masterpiece.
Well, there you go. Davis, right?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
How about that? Small world. Small world. All right. Yeah, whatever. Go for it, Buffalo. Do whatever you got to do. I am happy. I was happy for Cleveland to be back in. Great fans, and I'm happy for the Bills fans.
Absolutely.
And I'm happy for the folding table industry.
That's right.
Because their sales are going through the roof. More time to light them on fire and jump on them.
What a tradition.
Now. Yeah. So we might have a couple of those in the Final Four for Sal when he comes on tomorrow. Blair Kirkhoff is with us, brought to you by Robert Brogdon, Buick GMC. Blair, tell me. Jeremy Pruitt. Listen, I started asking people in that cover college football about this last summer about how, hey, hearing that recruiting class is like not sketch or is not legit. It's like very sketch, and they didn't want to go anywhere near it. And now he's been blown out. If it's getting to talk show fatty in Kansas City, like they weren't even subtle. Cash in McDonald's bags.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, that's that was quite the revelation for some, not to you, but for some earlier this week. You know, the reaction on social media was, well, you know, we'd all been kind of hearing little bits and pieces of it, but you know, the rumor had, you know, the rumors that were out there was, and Pruitt not only was denying it, but was vowing to fight it, you know, and to challenge it. And I guess the evidence was just overwhelming, and they've got enough proof, and so Tennessee, You know, fired him for cause and avoided paying. What was it? $12 million I forgot what the number was.
Yeah, $12.6 million
So it was a, you know, a bit of a, you know, financial decision as well. But you're right. I mean, it's this sets Tennessee back. I don't care who, you know, I don't care who comes in anytime soon. It's, is it Kevin Steele, I guess, is going to be the interim guy?
Well, he's the interim. They just hired the athletic director today.
I didn't see that.
Yeah, Mike White, or no, Danny White, not Danny White, the Cowboys player and the Arena Football League championship coach. Danny White was the athletic director at Central Florida. Hmm. Is right? I got that right, don't I? Chris?
Yeah, you got it right.
Yeah, he was okay. Right. I guess
no one was saying anything, and I'm like, uh-oh, did I screw that
no,
up?
No, I guess it was Scott Frost's AD down there.
Yeah, yes. And so, you know, he's had success at Central Florida and built up their athletic program, and so I think it's a fine hire and everything.
Yeah, that sounds right. I mean, it sounds like a decent hire.
Can you go hire somebody now, or is the better idea to just ride it out with Kevin Steele for a year? He's had experience. Take your lumps so that some new coach doesn't have to come in and be part of a mess, because they had four kids hit the transfer portal today. So you know there's going to be a mass exodus. I can't see. I mean, no one's going to come to Tennessee, are they, if Kevin Steele's the coach? I mean, it could be an awful season.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, really, really bad. I mean, look, it's the SEC. You're going to, you know, how are you going to recruit to that school while this cloud is over, you know, over the program? This will set him back. It should set him back for a couple of years. At least a couple of years, and then it may be even longer. But that's, you know, there are plenty in the division that are looking to take advantage of this. This is how things happen in college football, in college sports. Someone's down and others leap over them. And Missouri was already ahead of them in the standing this year. Now Tennessee beat Missouri in the second game, right? It was week two. But mm-hmm. But I think by the end of the season, we were thinking Missouri was better than Tennessee, and if they had played again, Missouri would win. And I think this certainly keeps Missouri ahead of Tennessee, but it also probably vaults Kentucky, South Carolina over the Vols as well. So, yeah, Tennessee, we spent an inordinate amount of time talking about a program that doesn't win. You know, that's won nine, you know, topped out at nine wins since Phil Fulmer won the national championship, or the Phil Fulmer years since he retired. They've topped out at nine wins and have not been a factor nationally so the question to me is Tennessee, it's a historically proud and good football program. Should there be an expectation of, you know, national level success there? Tennessee, I think, views itself differently than the rest of college sports views Tennessee, and they just haven't lived up to what I think their fans think they are. And I, you know, there's some other schools like that. I think Texas A&M is also a school similar, but.
But they went out and gave whatever it was, $10 million a year to Jimbo Fisher.
They
went out and said, okay.
They did.
Let's go get it done. Tennessee keeps trying to do it on the cheap.
Well, they've done the, you know, let's go to the level down coach, right? The one who's won at either the group of five, you know, that was the Butch Jones hire, or the Derek Dooley hire. Let's try that, and so they tried something different. Let's hire the coordinator from the national championship program, and that didn't work either. I don't know. Look, it goes back to something I've always thought about college football, and it has to do with the level of interest in a program that is kind of identified by your stadium, right? If you have a stadium that seats as many as Tennessee does, which is 110,000, there is an expectation level that is off the charts at that school, off the charts. And they have never been able, not since Phil Fulmer, have they been able to live up to it. And they've just had a series of bad hires and bad fires. And you know, they had a chance to get Greg Schiano, and you know, that was a, there was a fan revolt over that, and John Curry was the athletic director at the time, and he lost his job over that whole fiasco. So, you know, it's a mess. It's a mess in Tennessee right now. It's going to take them a while to dig out of it.
Yeah, it's good news for Missouri, though.
Yep. Yeah, it is.
That Tennessee, I mean, they're not what they think they are, but they are capable of being, you know, at least Missouri's equal. You know, I think we would agree with that.
Well, I think I'm sure they believe that they need to be, you know, Alabama and at least Georgia, Florida equal, and then have a shot at Tennessee every once in a while. And they haven't been there. When was the last time Tennessee played in the SEC title game? You know, it's only been Georgia, Florida, and then the two Missouri years for as long as I can remember. You know, how far back do you have to go to think of Tennessee in that championship game? So
that's a great question. That is a great question because I have no idea. I'll say this: they're a program that is good enough to win when some of the big boys are down.
Right, which is what Missouri was in 13 and 14, you know, when...
Well, no, I mean win a national championship.
Oh, okay.
I don't put Missouri at that level yet, and may never, and probably will never put them at that level. But I think Tennessee is a step up, 100,000 plus, 110,000 when they're up and running and going well. Now that stadium is a problem because there's so many empty seats.
Yeah. Yeah, even before COVID, there were thousands of empty seats there. It looked bad on TV.
Absolutely, and so, but I think that there's a commitment to it. But one of the things they might think about doing is getting out of the Alabama game every year.
Yeah, that harkens back to their, you know, General Nealon days, and you know, we battle Alabama every year, and I'm sure Alabama loves that arrangement.
Oh God, yes they do. Of course they do. Of course they do. It's just ridiculous. But anyway, we'll see what they can do coach-wise. They're probably best to just ride it out with Kevin Steele and then find the best candidate available. But I don't even know. Who's like the home run candidate? Urban Meyer's now taking the Jaguars' job, so that's off the books.
I guess
Matt Campbell. If I were them, I'd be doing whatever it takes to go get Matt Campbell. But he looks like the closest thing to a sure thing. As I can see out there, let's Blair. I want to talk about Steve Wilks getting the DC job at Mizzou. Do you like that hire?
I love that hire. I love it. I didn't know who Steve Wilks was until the Chiefs played the Cardinals in Mahomes' first year as a starter, and Mahomes was killing everybody. And you know, you remember his 18th season, just killing everybody. Yeah. I think he had one down game against Jacksonville, but the Chiefs still scored like 30 points in that game. And then the Cardinals came into Arrowhead Stadium, and I remember, you know, we got the weekly conversation with the opposing coach, and I had to look up bio on Steve Wilks because I didn't know his background, and I was happy to discover he, like myself, attended Appalachian State, so he's an Appy State guy, and they came in and had the best defensive game plan against Mahomes that I think anybody threw at the Chiefs that year. It was terrific. And the Chiefs ended up winning by a couple touchdowns, but they didn't get to 30. And that may have been the first time all year they didn't get to 30. And I was just like, wow, who is this guy? And so I started looking at his background and, you know, a lot of defense in his background. And he was successful at all kinds of different stops. But the team didn't win. They were 3-13. He didn't get a chance, and they fired him after 1 year, and then went out and hired Kingsbury. But he made such an impression on me that day that I made it a point to follow him. I know he was the Browns guy, defensive coordinator, in 19, in the Freddie Kitchens year, but then Stefanski didn't keep him. So he was. I don't think he was working, or I don't think he had a job this past year in coaching, but. Boy, for Missouri to get him, I think that's a fantastic hire. And maybe there is a little Appalachian State connection there with Drinkwitz having coached there last year. Whatever it took to get him there, I'm pretty excited about the prospect of him being there. NFL head coach is your defensive coordinator.
I think that's a heck of a sales pitch to be able to make when you've got the NFL. You know, tag on you.
Yep. He knows what it takes. He knows what it takes to win in the NFL or to be successful in the NFL.
Yeah, I think that does help you on the recruiting trail when you can talk about the league, because that's where every guy wants to go. So I do like that part of the equation. Drinkwitz 5-5, right, against all SEC opponents. Good start, right? We exceeded the win total, 3.5, right? He exceeded the win total, so he exceeded expectations. Now the bar will be raised. But, you know, a coordinator making a lateral move to go to Illinois.
Yeah.
And so if we turn around and there's another major coaching change and another major coaching change with guys not getting better jobs, I mean, how many is a warning sign?
Well, I think another one would be, and then you start have to asking what the, you know, how much of it is a financial commitment that Missouri's not making to pay its coaches. I don't know if that's the case of the coach that went to Illinois, but you wonder what, you know, to leave. He left a coach going into his second year for a coach that's going into his first year. So it's not like, you know, it's not like Drinkwitz's job is on the line, and you know he's in his third year, and they've had three losing seasons, and it's winner or you're done. You know, he was the arrow's pointing up at Missouri, and to lose a coach, a coordinator to Illinois was just, you know, it's worth noting. It's worth noting that it happened, you have to wonder if, you know, if something like that happens again, then you start questioning, you know, the financial commitment. You and I talked about this late in the year when Drinkwitz was on one of his Zoom calls and said, you know, we're doing our job. Now it's time for you to step up. Mm-hmm. And he wasn't talking to reporters. You know, he was talking through reporters to the fan base and the donors and people that that financially make it happen for Mizzou. So that to me is the takeaway from that.
Yeah, that's I agree that there's work to be done, and everybody better be on board and getting it done. All right, we'll take a break. We'll come back. We'll talk about Kansas, not near Baylor right now at this time. Where are they? What is the upside? What's Bill Self getting a chance as the underdog mean? We'll talk about that with Blair Kirkhoff. He's brought to you by Robert Brogdon, Buick GMC.
The program with Soren Petro.
And now, here with an unlimited supply of misinformation is Mr. Know-It-All.
Weekdays from 2 to 6 on Sports Radio 810 WHB.
You're in the program here on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Soren Petro with you. Blair Kirkhoff, our guest, brought to you by our friends at Robert Brogdon Buick GMC. I-35 and Santa Fe, save thousands, get the best deal, and no wasted time, right? They're going to get you in and out as fast as possible. You need a vehicle, go see the folks that have been the number one GM dealer in the metro time and time and time again. It's Robert Brogdon Buick GMC. Find them online at robertbrogdon.com. Blair, the rare circumstance where Bill Self finds himself the underdog. This, I think, is an opportunity. You know, the expectations are going to not be Final Four, championship game type of expectations, to where he could finally maybe have like a little run where he goes to the Elite Eight and everybody's happy he got to the Elite Eight, as opposed to like, oh, just another Elite Eight.
Right. I mean, he said it himself after the game that, Baylor is basically the class of the league. And heck, they played Baylor a lot better than they played Texas in Allen Fieldhouse a couple of weeks earlier, when Texas just blew the doors off of them. I thought, you know, I was a little I was interested in Bill Self's post game because he was more upbeat than I thought he might have been. He was pretty happy with the way KU played in the second half, and I think they ended up outscoring Baylor, but they lost that game in by the second TV timeout when they're down double digits and trailed by as much as 16 in the. You know, in the first half, in their four losses, that's what's happened. They just get buried. Now, in some of the games, like Gonzaga, they battled back and actually tied the game. And against Baylor, they battled back and cut it to 5 and had the ball with three or four minutes to go, but had a turnover there. And then Jared Butler is just fantastic. Hit the big long three and made it an 8-point game and turned it around. But I don't think it's a bad place for Kansas to be. We knew it was going to, they weren't picked to win the league. Baylor was. So it's kind of falling according to form. And this gives This gives Kansas a chance during the regular season to maybe to try some things, experiment with some things, and not have the not every game is life and death. Maybe you can you can live with games in which you're trying some different lineups, different combinations, and maybe they hit on something by the season's end with the right combo, and they catch fire in March. So I don't know. I think it's fun to watch them. They're developing, and I'll tell you one thing. I do want to see from Kansas is Jalen Wilson to be the player that, Kansas needs to see the best of Jalen Wilson because on a more consistent basis, because we saw it against Kentucky and we saw it against Creighton and some of their better wins, but then he'll, then he's not part of things for too long a time.
But maybe this is why he was 57 and not 7.
Maybe.
In the class.
Yeah, maybe, but it's also could be that he and David McCormick can't play together, and you've got to figure out a way to maximize both of those guys' talents, because when Kansas goes five guards, McCormick's obviously not on the floor, and McCormick was just eaten up by Baylor, and I think that kind of slows down what Kansas wants to do offensively, and Baylor is fantastic defensively. I heard Greg Gurley say it earlier this week, and I agree that I think the difference between Gonzaga and Baylor right now is Baylor just plays great defense. And I think they would beat Gonzaga.
Remember when Baylor played no defense?
No, gosh, they played the zone. Remember when Scott Drew was married to the zone, and he always had great athletes, and still wouldn't try to play man to man. He would zone them up, and they won some games, but never finished first, never won a tournament. Had some NCAA tournament success, some Sweet 16 runs, a couple of Elite Eights even. But now I think they're man-to-man, and that's because their men are better than most other teams' men.
Yeah, I think the league is fun because Texas Tech's in there, West Virginia's in there.
Yep, Texas.
Texas is in there. There's a lot of good teams. I'm curious if Shaka Smart, who's going to lose a lot of guys next year, he's kind of got a Missouri situation and maybe a one and done. If Shaka Smart doesn't say, okay, here it is, it's time to bounce. It's time to restart the shot clock.
Maybe. He's fortunate to still be in Austin.
And that's the thing, and I bet you everybody's reminding him of it. And it's kind of like, maybe I should go back to a basketball school someplace. I got the big check. Let's go someplace where I can be a little more appreciated.
They were on the bubble last year and probably needed to win their first game in the Big 12 tournament to feel, to feel better about their chances. So that was the story. Maybe the stoppage of the season saved Shaka Smart's job. But he is, they are good. When Texas meets Baylor this year, those are going to be great games, and they're fun to watch. And it's great the Jones, the kid who had the cancer coming back. He's just been a great story for Texas.
Yeah, should be a lot of fun games. Blair, always fun talking to you. We appreciate the time, my friend. We will do it again next week.
Okay, sounds good, Seren.
Blair Kirkhoff brought to you by Robert Brogdon Buick GMC. Henhouse has you covered getting you ready for the games this weekend. Make sure you check out all the great specials. They got everything you need for a great party at your house. It's at your neighborhood Henhouse. Get by the delicatessen tonight and start figuring out what you want. Party trays galore at your neighborhood.
Time for our Deli Fresh end of the hour question. Sponsored by Good Sense. Chosen by KC sandwich lovers for 30 years. Good Sense, not because it's easy, but because it's better.
All right, how many AFC championship games have gone to overtime? Brought to you by Good Sense.